You're listening to We're Only Human, hosted by Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We're Only Human focuses and highlights how modern technology and new ways of working are creating a more people-centric workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.h3hr.com.
Hello, everybody. This is Ben Eubanks, and welcome back to the We're Only Human podcast. This episode is special because it marks the one-year anniversary of joining the HR Happy Hour podcast network. You know, the show's been a lot of fun. It's been a great journey so far. I really enjoy the format and sharing stories and research with all of you, or all y'all, as we say here in Alabama. If you want to shoot me a note to ask about future topics or just share some feedback, you can always reach me at ben@upstarthr.com. I just wanted to say thanks for following the show, and you know, I really appreciate each and every one of you taking the time out of your day to join this incredibly good-looking and intelligent community of people. It's just great to have you. So, what's new in your world? If you're like us here at the Eubanks household, you're getting back in the swing of the school year, maybe even you know, appreciating a little dip in temperatures, thank goodness. Personally, I've had a great summer, lots of fun with the kids. Sometimes it is hard, I'll admit, getting things done when I know they're just downstairs and always ready to play. That's worth a show in itself, probably, to talk about the pros and cons of working remotely. But today we're here for a different reason. I'm excited to bring you an interview with a founder of a new company that is hoping to reinvent and revolutionize the recruiting world by focusing not on time to fill or quality of hire, but on meeting actual candidate needs and really serving that audience well. Right, with so much focus on the candidate experience and creating an employer brand that really resonates with your potential hires, it's not surprising that someone stepped up to fill that gap. My conversation with Terry Terhark, founder of Rander, covers a wide variety of points, from what's broken with hiring and recruiting today to a thorough analysis of just what candidates really want from employers. Hint, it's not to be stuffed into yet another talent pool and forgotten about. So, with that, let's get on with the show.
Hello, everybody. This is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human, and I'm bringing you a guest today that's just a wealth of information, wealth of knowledge on the recruiting and the talent acquisition world. He's started and run several successful companies. He has recently launched his new technology firm in the market, and he's really focusing on addressing some of the challenges that more traditional recruiting technologies either can't or won't address. Terry Terhark, welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning, Ben. Thanks for having me. Excited about sharing some thoughts and perspectives today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny. We were talking the other day, and I said, you know, the hardest part for us probably will be reining in our conversation, because every time we have a chance to connect and chat, we're always throwing ideas back and forth. And I thought it would be fun for kind of the audience to listen into a little bit of that and hear some of the things we're talking about in terms of trends and some of the other kind of high overarching things. But before we get into that, can you just take a moment and kind of tell the audience a little bit about you and your background? I think that would benefit them.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had the great fortune of spending the last 25 years or so in recruiting, and have certainly experienced what it's like to be heads down recruiter from a contingency perspective. I've had the opportunity to be involved with a couple of recruitment outsourcing organizations, helping support companies in their hiring efforts, and very much have watched the industry as well as the way that we interact with candidates and companies progress and change over the years. So hopefully some of that experience I can share with you my perspective of not only where we're at today, but where I believe we're going in the future.
Absolutely. And just to give everybody kind of a preview, because I know we'll touch on kind of some of the things you're focusing on with Rander, but can you tell us just, you know, the 30-second highlight of what Rander is, who you are, what you're trying to focus on?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, having spent my life in recruiting, became apparent to me that some of the issues that we discuss, whether we are a recruiting professional or whether we're a company, are very similar to the issues that I heard 20 years ago, whether that's candidate experience, branding, finding the right quality, being able to have access to the path of candidate, et cetera, et cetera. Really felt like it was time to understand what the core problem is, which is, in our opinion, the way that people and companies connect is fundamentally broken. And if that premise is correct, then how can you build technology to be able to solve for that? So RANDR, which does stand for Reinvent and Revolutionize Recruiting, is really a consumer-based platform that is meant to provide individuals or people with information they can consume about themselves relative to how they fit into the market, what opportunities are available for them, how competitive they are for opportunities, career paths, ability to seek positions, et cetera, et cetera.
Excellent. Excellent. Awesome. So I think that provides a little bit of the background, because as we're talking through the conversation today, I might ask you to throw in kind of a how you guys approach that, because I think you have a unique viewpoint on the world, and that's
for
part
sure.
of the reason, you know, I love chatting with you, because it's different from what I hear from others, and again, just the broad range of experience you've had lets you talk about that in very practical ways. It's not just a pie in the sky kind of here's an idea, but here's how you've actually seen it, you know, working or not working in the past. So I think that'll be kind of fun to bring that to bear. So earlier this year, we actually launched at Lighthouse this Talent Acquisition Priority Study. We wanted to understand what the top priorities were for recruiting leaders across the world, and got 400-something responses back, and really good data in there. I'm going to make sure I got a link in the show notes for everybody to check it out if you're interested. But some of the top priorities for this year were things like sourcing. Again, come back to your comment, the same kind of problems, right? Sourcing, candidate experience, employer branding, those same things were their problems that they're dealing with this year. They're still the top of the heap. And we know, you know, sourcing people isn't a new problem. But one thing that I've actually seen in the last year, I've actually done some hands-on sourcing to help out a couple of clients and kind of, you know, keep my feet grounded and understanding what's going on. And one of the things that I've noticed that in some industries, some professions, people are actually less receptive to some of those cold calls and the outreach and things. As a recruiter, as a sourcer, you know, trying to be proactive at reaching out. What are your thoughts on that? Why do you think that is? What kind of things might be impacting that?
Yeah, it's a great question, Ben. I think there's probably a number of things that are leading to that. And I'll digress for a second. We did a project helping a company find physical therapists a year ago, and we took it on very naively. And as we started calling physical therapists, they would hang up on us pretty much very quickly into the conversation because they were getting pounded by people just because it was a supply and demand issue. And I think that, you know, we've evolved as a society primarily because of technology and how technology serves us. And you know, certainly from a millennial perspective, having two, recent college graduates myself, how they interact with technology more so than maybe what my generation does. You know, I think that people expect to have information presented to them in a certain way. And the art of a cold call, and trust me, that's where I began my career. So, keenly aware of how valuable, you know, reaching out to people, having a conversation can be. But I'm not sure that we live in that day and age where that is the first interaction that you might have with someone. Hmm. We ask ourselves, and we certainly do as well here, if not a conversation, a phone conversation, what's the proper mechanism by which to communicate with people or make an introduction? I don't believe it's email, you know, because there's a lot of people that aren't necessarily using email at all. In fact, some people, you know, have abandoned email as a tool and use other elements of technology to be able to interact. So, you know, to answer your question, I think that, you know, people expect to be communicated with in a different way. And I also believe that they expect to have information presented to them in a way that perhaps if we're doing a cold call, that doesn't necessarily facilitate that.
Mm. Yeah, I would definitely agree with it. And I had my share of those thanks but no thanks, if they were that polite kind of things, or completely, you know, just not responding at all to those kind of things. And so I would echo that. Not physical therapists that I was reaching out to, but actually cybersecurity people and, you know, software engineering talent and things like that, and the same kind of stuff. It's partially, you know, supply and demand, and those people just get hit all the time for things, and so it's got to be something really appealing. And it's also interesting, the one thing that I noted as I was kind of combing the resume databases and trying to find, you know, the right people, is that a lot of them that were really really would have been at the top of the pile in terms of their skills and their abilities and their experience, a lot of them had things on there like a list of demands almost, whereas if you're interested in talking to me, I will only accept these conditions, you know, whether it be remote work or, you know, a part-time schedule or, you know, Fridays off or something like that. And it was really interesting, but like you said, it's a supply and demand kind of thing, I would say, in some of those cases. And what really, it kind of struck me that it's a candidate's market almost, right? You know, like just when you're buying a home, if it's a buyer's market, the buyers get to demand those terms. In the recruiting world, if it's a candidate's market, they get to demand some of those terms. And whether it's, I won't talk to you until I have the right information at my fingertips, or you got to make something really attractive, really appealing, really quickly, or this conversation isn't going anywhere.
I think it's an interesting discussion, Ben, in as much as being a candidate's market. I don't think there's any question, you know, if you're working in recruiting today, you understand the dynamics of the labor markets and the pressure that exists, not only in what we, you know, normally refer to as high-pressure fields like software engineering or nursing or pharmacy, et cetera, but it certainly crept into other elements, and whether that's skilled trades or sales, or you could go down the list of fields where there's considerable pressure. Interesting to me is that while we as recruiters, you know, certainly understand that it's a candidate's market, and oftentimes they may have the upper hand in terms of dictating what those demands might be, from a company's perspective, I don't know that necessarily opinions have changed in terms of how you process, how you interact, how you direct recruit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, even today, you know, some of the statistics that we've been able to gather indicate that the process, whether that's online job search or, you know, the recruiting process in general, is highly disappointing and highly frustrating. In fact, almost three-quarters of people that we polled in a survey that we did described online job search as frustrating or disappointing. So, you know, I believe we're at this crossroads where technology and or company behavior really has to shift in order to be able to provide individuals or those you're recruiting with an experience that they desire.
Absolutely. Yeah, I definitely think that's true. And that story might be old hat to you and I, because we've kind of beat that drum for a while and talked about how things are changing. But again, there are still people that are listening today that haven't stopped to think about those kind of things, even the demographic changes you mentioned a minute ago and how those might be affecting the way that candidates want to interact with people. It's really interesting. A couple of years ago, I published a case study on a supermarket that was based in, I want to say, Turkey. It's been a couple of years, but they had won an award for this program they put together, and all it was a way for candidates to log in and see if their resume had been looked at or not, you know, at the most basic element. They just wanted to know, did someone see this?
Because it's, yeah, I think that, you know. Yeah, I think that's awesome, and I think, you know, certainly information we've gathered from whether those are active job seekers or just people in general, you know, the primary concern or primary interest that they have is knowing what happened. And even if the answer is not a positive one, they want to be informed of, again, whether the resume was looked at, whether they're proceeding, whether the position has been closed. So, you know, we felt and I felt for a long time that transparency in the process, it's incredibly hard, you know, to be able to provide that transparency, but that is primarily what people seek. I find it interesting, and of course we've done a lot of studies around numbers. You know, companies will, you know, certainly describe the experience as painful, primarily because of the number of resumes they might receive. And in fact, I believe the numbers around 150 resumes on average are received for every posting or every position. And, you know, that's impossible for a company to qualitatively be able to go through that. Yet, the technology that people are using kind of encourages more and more applications, more and more submittals, you know, and that really is just exacerbating the kind of the core issue.
Yeah, there's two things that I have to that, because I have conversations with people sometimes, and they say, you know, we just need more candidates. I'm like, maybe you don't. Maybe we don't need more candidates, because that's more to look through. That's more people that you're going to have to reject ultimately. And that's the thing that sometimes eludes us, is there's only one person usually that's going to get that job, unless you're hiring for multiple positions. But usually, for most times, it's one person going to get that job ultimately. And to think about, would I rather tell 100 people or 50 people that they didn't get it? You know, that's one thing. And it just amazes me. I had a story last year about a company that was really, really having some trouble with some turnover in one of their positions, and they realized, you know, we've been trying to gather more and more and more applicants, and it's not working for us. So what they did is they actually flipped it over, and they made someone, if they applied, it was just a kind of a pre-application step, and they would send them a quick little assessment, like, hey, tell us about you, and, you know, what are your thoughts on safety, because it's like a safety engineer position. And so they responded back to that. They became further qualified, and instead of seeing it like the funnel where it's just very basic qualifications will get you into consideration, it was like the reverse funnel, where you had to successfully complete these steps in order to be even considered for the job. And ultimately, they felt like the people that made it through that were very interested. They were actually bought into the idea. They had given some more of their time and effort, so they felt more invested in it. They're not that candidate that applies, then you never hear from again, even if you're interested in them. Because I've seen that happen as well, where someone applies and you can't ever get them to, you know, reconnect with you when you actually want to hire them. And so it's interesting that they kind of flip that over. And I'd agree with you. It's part of it's just being more transparent, but part of it's being more aware of the idea that more candidates doesn't always mean better. I actually had a client last year that I was working with, trying to hone some of their recruiting strategy and help them get some metrics and things in place to understand how they're performing. And they were actually purchasing Indeed sponsored ads to get their jobs pushed up in the listings. Mm-hmm. And we implemented an ATS and put their first one in place, and they were, you know, kind of blown away by that whole process. And it fed the jobs out automatically to Indeed and the other sites. So we were talking one day. I said, you know, are you guys still sponsoring those? And they said, yeah, you know, we're getting, you know, so many hundreds of candidates by spending this much money. I said, but let's try for a month and turn that off. Let's not spend anything and see what happens. And they actually got fewer candidates, but the same level of quality was coming in as it was previously. So they were paying extra money for extra candidates that didn't get them anywhere. You know, they were getting this bigger resume bank of people that were not qualified to do the jobs they had, and so they ultimately kind of realized that wasn't working for them. It was, you know, it was helping them get greater quantity but not greater quality in that sort of conversation. And that's not a knock on Indeed. That's just a kind of a focus on, in general, being aware of where your good candidates come from, how qualified they are, and so on. And a lot of people just don't have a handle on that kind of thing, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree entirely. And I've got a couple kind of comments related to that. Number one, I think, you know, companies have been conditioned to have a bit of a shotgun approach to try a number of things, because we all know there really is no silver bullet in sourcing and recruiting that is, you know, kind of commitment to a comprehensive strategy, because you never know where best quality is going to come from. Secondarily, I always found it fascinating in the RPO world, because theoretically, as an RPO provider, our objective was to whittle down that funnel, provide the hiring manager with the top three or four candidates. And invariably, whenever we would start with a new client, the manager may have been used to seeing 10 resumes or 20 resumes or all the resumes, and we would come with three. There was this perception that we hadn't dug deep enough or that we hadn't surfaced the right quality. And in fact, those three or four that we submitted may have been the right quality, but they're so, you know, managers are so used to looking at a number of pieces of paper that they felt like that we needed to do a little bit more digging. So I think it's a little bit of behavior shift around, you know, how companies interact with candidates. And, you know, my viewpoint is slightly different, and you kind of touched on it, in as much that I believe on a going forward basis, you know, if we look to the future of what recruiting should look like, you know, those 150 resumes or submittals on the posting or position, that has to change, so that we really can't sustain that. You know, I'd love to see an environment where A manager gets three people, five people, and that's all they see, because technology and or the process has guided people to be able to match themselves to the right opportunity, or the companies have described what it is they're seeking so well that people understand the expectation, and the right people come to the position versus the most people.
Yeah, absolutely. Get that emblazoned on the side of the building, right? The right people, not the most people. I think that's
correct.
That's the right direction to go for sure. Okay, let me take a little bit of a turn here, because I had this conversation with somebody recently, and I want to quote it, because I want you to tell me, is this true? Is it off the mark? All right, based on, again, your view of the world. This is what candidates actually want. They want an organized, transparent view into the potential career paths and opportunities at a company. They want to see down the line, not just this immediate job. What they're actually getting, though, is kind of a mishmash of ad hoc referral programs. Hey, if this opens up, we'll find it for you. There's talent communities, but they're really just feeders for the ATS to keep the candidates at arm's length. And they're not really getting any insight into the actual advancement or any other opportunities at the business besides just whatever they're posting. And they want to see that deeper level. What do you think about that? Is that true? Does that resonate with you at all?
It does. And in fact, it resonates very genuinely in terms of what I've heard. I've had the great fortune of speaking to thousands of people and really trying to understand what it is they're trying to do. And I don't necessarily believe it's a generational thing. So I don't believe it's as easy as saying, well, millennials want this and Gen X wants that. I believe that people in general want to understand not only what it is they're applying for, but what opportunities might be available beyond that. And I think the key in what you said, Ben, was transparency. We hear that all the time. We hear candidates or job seekers, complain about transparency or lack of transparency on a continual basis. And while I've certainly heard about talent communities and certainly see the new technology that's coming to the market, whether that's sourcing technology, screening technology, applicant tracking technology, until we have technology that serves the needs of people in a much better way than what we have today, I don't believe we're going to close the gap in terms of what people are seeking and what companies are providing. And I don't believe that it's as much that companies don't want to provide that. I just believe that we don't necessarily have the technology that makes that easy for companies to be able to share in that way.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a minute, because I know someone's listening to this thinking, you know what, that's all nice, but it's my job to fill the job, right? It's my job to put a butt in that seat, not to hold the hands of these candidates or give them these updates or, show them their future career path. That's on them. What would you say to that person?
Yeah, unfortunately, and this may not be the most popular answer, I believe that thinking is archaic. And yes, while I, trust me, I've been a recruiter for many, many years, I know at the end of the day, the objective is to fill the position. But we live in a day and an age where, companies, I don't believe, can have the same opinions and thoughts that they've always had. Like, I have something to offer, and you have to meet my requirements, and it's more of a two-way street. Not only is that the way that we act as a society, but in job search or careers, and particularly as we see, the younger generations, move up, become more mainstream in terms of the population of employees, that mentality has got to shift so that it's kind of an equal playing field or a two-way street.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's definitely the right direction to go there, and the viewpoint to really take, right? To think about this not just as we always have, where I'm running the show, I control everything, I call the shots as the recruiter or the hiring manager, and really I've seen a lot more, not just content, but a lot more conversations where candidates, again, I gave kind of an extreme example earlier where, hey, I won't talk to you unless you meet these demands, but I think a lot more candidates are going in with the idea that I'm interviewing this company too. And I'm trying to find out if they're the right one for me, especially if they already have a job. They have no vested interest in jumping over. They don't have to just take a job for the sake of it. They're much more discerning in their approach, and I think that kind of that level of discernment is going to be more and more common as people become smarter about whether it's being able to see transparently into the organization, understand the opportunities, or even the culture, those elements that you in the past couldn't see. I think that's only part of it. And a part of it, too, is just how they feel about the company, the culture, and everything else. Again, I've seen different research studies over the last few years that talk about how culture in some cases can be more important than pay for some people coming into the workforce because they're that focused on being able to work for a company that they feel good about, that they feel like they can grow at, that they feel, you know, comfortable with, versus just saying, you know, I'm working for the paycheck, because it's so much more than that. People really are seeking that meaning, seeking that whatever word you want to call it, that purpose from work, because we identify with it so heavily. And so, yeah, I definitely agree with you, though, that just going back to your comment about the two-way street, it's definitely much more of that today than it ever has been in the past. And it'll be really exciting to see how that continues to develop. You know, will companies start to look at narrowing that field and trying to reduce the number of people that apply, or trying to have better conversations with fewer people? Because I think there's a lot of value to that. I know you and I actually talked about this the other day, the concept of AI or artificial intelligence and how that's kind of affecting some of the technology in the space and might even be affecting kind of the workload and the tasks that recruiters are taking on. You want to take just a second and talk about, you know, kind of how this is affecting that, machine learning, natural language processing? I know that you can even talk about kind of the use cases that you guys have in place, if you like, just to kind of explain how those things work, because one of the biggest challenges that I have when I'm talking about the topic is just that initial education of here's how this applies to what we're doing in recruiting and how it applies to our space.
Yeah, for sure, Ben. And, you know, I'm a recruiter, you know, and kind of old dog, new trick, you know, certainly fits with me. And as we are building our software platform, I've had to learn an incredible amount around all the terms that you mentioned, from machine learning, natural language processing, and artificial intelligence. And, you know, all of them are interesting buzzwords, and we're certainly hearing it all the time, and not just in our industry, but across every industry, that's going to change the way that this happens, or the way that this occurs. And I'm one of those who, you know, fundamentally believes that recruiting is kind of a human science, and you can never really take the human, you know, out of the transaction. However, you know, I'm also an adopter of technology, and have watched how technology has changed our lives and how it puts information at our fingertips. And it's fascinating to me to be able to have all the information, whether it's a Zillow or Glassdoor or LinkedIn. I mean, you go down the list of, you know, all these platforms that now, you know, provide us information that we didn't have before. And I think we can use that same kind of analogy in recruiting. And I believe that we've only scratched the surface in terms of how machine learning, natural language processing, or artificial intelligence can actually assist not only the recruiter, but the company in terms of, you know, how you access all this information. If I look at how we're using it, and again, when I first started, all these terms kind of meant the same to me, and I've certainly learned the difference. And whether we use machine learning to be able to take a look at a job posting and understand what occupation that goes to or what job title that goes to, whether we use natural language processing to understand on a job posting if that's skill-based information or whether that's benefits-based information or education, you know, all of those things can help us get to not only what it is the company's looking for, but more importantly, from our perspective, what it is that the individual is seeking. You know, all of these AI terminologies have a place in recruiting. And, you know, for those of us that may have been in recruiting for many years, to think that, you know, big data and or AI cannot impact the way that we make the experience more beneficial for people and, you know, certainly more gratifying for companies, I believe that's incorrect thinking. You know, I believe we have to embrace how technology serves people in this equation. One of the things that I've been very, very passionate about is that if I look at the history of recruiting, you know, all of the tools and processes and technologies historically have been built for the benefit of the company. I understand that because the markets have dictated that. Again, getting back to supply and demand. However, if we look at not only where we're at today in terms of shortages that we may have in certain occupations, and certainly expect that to continue or to grow and to broaden across a number of industries or occupations, technology has to be more focused on individuals to provide them some of the things that you were actually indicating. What can I do with this company? How is the culture of this company? What career opportunities are available for me? How competitive am I for this position? How do I fit into that organization? By providing people with that information prior to them applying, I actually think we get at the root cause, which is let's make the connection a bit more elegant than what it is today. That was a really long answer to a short question. Not sure if I addressed it entirely for you, but happy to dig into that if you'd like.
No, I definitely think that's a good touch on the conversation. And again, we're not taking a deep dive into that because neither of us are data scientists. But I think that it's gonna, like you said, it has some ability to affect that. And my viewpoint is similar to yours. While the tools are definitely valuable and they'll become increasingly so, there still has to be a human touch in this conversation. Other than some very extreme use cases where people where companies are really struggling to find talent in the right places. And there was a neat story last year in HR Magazine about Amazon and how they had built this automated tool so that if someone applied for a job in one of their specific cities where they were really struggling to find technical talent and they met the qualifications based on their resume, an immediate parts of the resume, it would kick them back a quick note and say, you know, here's an assessment. If they answered the assessment questions right and seemed to be qualified in that quick little test, it would send them a job offer without ever talking to anyone.
Wow.
The first thought was, wow, that's really cool. And the second thought was, wow, that's really impersonal. You know, how do you even know if that, you know, the people you're going to be working with, the manager, the team, you know, how do you know anything about them? How do you know, you know, you might know generally publicly what's available about Amazon's culture, but you know as well as I do that every team, every department has their own unique kind of subculture that affects how things work. And so you don't get any of that insight and that awareness. And, you know, it was heralded as kind of this really amazing innovation, but at the same time I saw it as this almost failure to connect with people and that, on that fundamental level they're looking for. You know, that candidate, you know, might be glad to get that quick response. You know, there's a good part to that, but at the same time you have to find out by trial and error on the job once you're already there whether you like the kind of work you're doing, the people you're working with, and all those other things that you can usually hash out in a couple interviews or at least a couple conversations with a recruiter and understand how well it's going to fit for you.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like it's an interesting example you use there. And, you know, I absolutely believe there needs to be conversation somewhere. You know, again, being a bit of an old school recruiter, you know, the art of the sale on both sides of the equation, whether it's the candidate kind of selling their background and their desire to want to work for this organization and the company and or the hiring manager, you know, selling the opportunity, selling the organization as a great place to be, like those conversations have to exist. And while technology can help us get to the right people, how we get to that quicker, how we eliminate, you know, all of the noise that exists around whether it's a number of people applying, getting to the right qualifications, your most desired candidate, et cetera, the conversation is really where that transaction takes place.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah, there's such a need for that. And I think, again, that's part of the problem today with the candidate experiences that the candidates feel like there's not enough interaction And so, again, this might be seen as an advance, but it really doesn't address that fundamental need that's at the core of this problem, this challenge of candidate experience, and providing something that makes people interested and excited about working there. Or I've always been of the thought that I am just as happy having a conversation as a recruiter and talking to a candidate and finding out they're interested in working there as I am about finding out that they're not interested. Because I'd rather
Absolutely.
Them find out in that conversation with me than find out, 2 weeks into the job and start searching and I have to backfill them again. So I'd rather them find that out long before they step foot in the door that this isn't going to be a fit for them culture-wise or whatever other expectations we might have of our people. And that's always been kind of a viewpoint of mine that some people it surprises maybe, but again, you'd rather know those things ahead of time before they're in the seat.
Yeah, totally agree. I think that what I've always found beneficial is, like, I will talk to anyone because you never know when you might need that skill set. They may not be a fit for you today, but if you begin a conversation, a relationship, and I know that talent communities in general are theoretically designed to begin the conversation in advance of the opening, and while I believe some of that technology can be useful to be able to help job seekers or candidates or passive candidates, however you want to define them, be able to have insights into your organization prior to you having a need, them having a desire. I always felt like having a conversation with someone, number one, to assess whether or not they're fit for that opening. If they're not, could they be valuable to the organization at some point down the road? Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you the number of times that I talk to someone, and then 2 years later, you go back, and then you have the right opportunity for that person. That is true recruiting. And to the extent that technology can enable that, then I believe we really start to crack the code.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, even that part where you come back to them at years later, it would be a completely fresh, different start if you had not built that existing relationship before. They would be a cold reach out, and we've already discussed some of the challenges of that if you hadn't taken that time to have that personal conversation, that personal connection with them in the past. So that's, again, just to one last nail on the top of that one to make sure that we hammer that one home. Goodness, this has been a lot of fun, Terry. Is there anything else you'd like to touch on before we wrap up?
No, I very much enjoyed the conversation, as you kind of indicated. Ben, we could probably spend a whole day talking about a variety of topics here. But I think we touched on, some of the core elements around what we need to do, whether we're a recruiter, whether we're a company, or whether we're, trying to go after, the ideal job seeker. But I think it's safe to say that we've made progress, but there's so much more that we need to do and we can do to be able to make this a two-way street.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would completely agree with that. I appreciate you being here, sharing your thoughts with us, Terry. If someone wants to learn more about Rander, where can they find out that information?
Well, they can certainly go to rander.com. There's a wealth of information about our organization. Okay. But certainly feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn or through our website as well. I'm happy to have a conversation about not only what it is that we're doing, but more so where we see technology going in the future, as well as how we think that the ecosystem needs to work in the future as well.
Awesome. Thanks, Terry. I'll make sure that link to Rander's in the show notes as well for anybody that missed that the spelling up at the beginning. So thank you, everybody, as always, for checking out We're Only Human. If you'd like to hear previous episodes, just check out our archives at upstarthr.com/podcast. This is Ben Eubanks, and we will see you next time.
Thanks for listening to We're Only Human with Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. To learn more and to listen to the show archives for We're Only Human and all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows, go to www.h3hr.com. And remember to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour Network podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast player app.